Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Cloud Unfiltered. Today, we have Emil Sayegh, hopefully I pronounced that right, from Entirety. And tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background. Just before you do that, today we're going to discuss a little bit about cloud security. So we're going to frame it up that way, but just tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you so much for hosting me. Glad to be here. And so I'm the CEO of a company called Entirety. We are a global managed services provider that's focused on compliance security. And I've been the CEO of this company basically for the last 5 years. Entirety is really the product of a merger between two companies called Hostway and Hosting. We consummated that merger about 2 years ago and rebranded the company as Entirety. So I've been operating under that that brand for quite a while now. Before that, I was the CEO of a company in the same general space, I would say, called Kadero. And then before that, I was at Rackspace, where I was the head of product development there, head of product, and then was the GM of the cloud business and helped conceive of the open source cloud operating system called OpenStack. I also started the cloud business at HP. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I live in Austin, Texas, and love the outdoors and love technology. And yeah, so looking forward to this.
So when you sent over your bio, you actually used the words fathers of OpenStack. And so I have to ask you, how do you feel about your baby, your son, going off into the world and just being completely destroyed over the last 3 to 5 years as people struggle to implement it?
Yeah.
What is your feelings on that?
I agree. I mean, the initial goal of OpenStack, that's a great segue. The initial goal of OpenStack, frankly, was a cloud operating system that would be able to stand up to the likes of Amazon and Azure and later Google, right? I think it kind of morphed as time went on to more of a private cloud, which is still, you know, a valid construct for it. Look, it served its purpose. It was a check at the time for the big boys and an alternative to the big boys. And I think now it's kind of finding its groove in more niche applications in private cloud. So, it's just kind of like the way that technology goes, right?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's kind of funny because, you know, everything's getting virtualized these days and the virtualization is getting virtualized. So, you know, it's like you're just abstracting away piece after piece. So it started out with the hypervisor, then it's a container. Now it's going, then it went down to serverless. Now it's just function as a service. What is it next? Is it like
infrastructure as code? Infrastructure as code, right?
Yeah. Infrastructure as code. Absolutely. So, you know, it's interesting how we're just keep abstracting away all these pieces, you know?
Yeah. Which is good because I mean, you know, that makes it portable. You can move from one cloud to the next. Right. And then, you can, and, you know, pretty soon, you know, a lot of people are not going to know how to interact with a server, you know, frankly, a lot of people will not know how to interact with a server. Right. And I think they just focus on what they're doing, which is coding and, you know, but that comes with its own set of issues because, you know, because sometimes you don't know how things actually work, you know, this is where security becomes, you know, very important. This is where SecDevOps becomes, very important, right. Where you're implementing true security, I'll say safeguards into your code. So, but anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting how things, kind of become that way because I remember, and this is going to make me sound old and Andrew always laughs at me for this, but I remember the DOS days and they were like, oh, well, Windows is abstracting away all that knowledge of what's going on before that. And you don't have to know assembly language and all this kind of stuff. And then they came out with .NET and then you don't have to know C. And then, you know, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of the same thing. And we just keep going further and further out where people are losing that knowledge. So are you telling me that my Banyan vines and all this knowledge of Novell NetWare and Lantastic and, you know, all this stuff is not relevant anymore? Is
that what it's still in high demand, man.
So when you guys reached out a couple of weeks ago, you know, it came at a very opportune time, because I think, you know, the way Emil was kind of pitched to us was here's someone who could come in and talk a lot about cloud security and cloud governance and compliance and et cetera. And, you know, obviously we were all reeling still from the news of the SolarWinds hack. And to be quite honest, like I still, my mind is completely blown with how, I'll say, in depth and thorough that attack was. But before we go down the route of talking about supply chain and SolarWinds and et cetera, you know, can you give us a kind of an impression on where cloud security is today? You know, like maybe
by the way, this is Andrew trying to reel things back in.
This is me being the father figure. Straight man. Well, yes, exactly. So yeah, I mean, just to kind of bring us back into that sort of cloud security sort of topic, you know, what have you seen in the industry change that kind of led us up into the SolarWinds attack before we get there?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you, security and disaster recovery were kind of, you know, whenever we'd go talk to CIOs, you know, they would think of them as nice to haves in many cases. You know, a lot of people would kind of to some level, you know, I would say before the increased frequency of hacks and attacks over the last year and a half, you know, people would just kind of roll their eyes whenever you would paint the worst case scenario, you know, that black swan kind of an event that's going to, you know, cripple a company or have disastrous effects, and say, you know, look, you know, you guys are in the industry, you know, you're geeks, you know, you're thinking about the worst possible scenarios and so on and so forth. I would say there is an awakening that is happening at different levels. Surprisingly, I want to tell you that the awareness for security threats is now at the board level. It's no longer at the at the technical level. So my message to all the technical folks, to the folks that, you know, are in IT and whatnot, is just make sure that, you know, you have your ducks in a row and you are really presenting the full picture to your management, because, you know, boards are under tons of pressure right now. So that their companies are not under cyber attacks or are compliant or whatnot. You know, a lot of the engagements that we used to get used to be from the IT department. You know, a lot of the engagement we get were from the CTO or the CIO or somebody with that kind of, or director of IT, that kind of title. Now we're getting pulled in from, you know, somebody on the board whose job is to make sure that their company doesn't get hacked or ransomware or right?
Yeah. So companies, and I've always said this, even when I was a consultant, I said companies care about risk. They don't care about security. So that's a different type of topic. So that's the key there. You know, if they look at the risk and they say, okay, what's the estimated risk? And they'll do something. And it's funny because I was in network security for about 20 years. And as a consultant, and I remember, you know, right after, you know, any of these NIMDA or whatever attacks back then when I was still in it, you know, were code red, you know, that's when the companies were very interested. And then, like, you know, you talk to them 2 to 4 weeks later and all of a sudden they forget very quickly, you know?
It's an interesting problem. One of the bigger hot takes out there is, do I even need to pay for security if the fines, the negative fallout of the breach isn't going to materialize into anything major, right? So if you look at Citibank, let's look at what was the other one, the tax firm, Equinix, right? A lot of them are probably operating in the same sort of number set that they were before the hack, right? I think about the fact that Target at one point had all of their APs hacked, and Home Depot had a similar issue. So, mm-hmm. You know, are you seeing a transition now, though, that CEOs are realizing that the ramifications of an attack far outweigh the perceived risk or fallout of that said attack?
I would say the answer is yes. Like I said, there's an awakening. It's at different levels, different degrees, and so on and so forth. But there's definitely an awakening. I think people are realizing, you know, look, you know, a lot of the stuff is not without effect. There's a, you know, SolarWinds has really, you know, I mean, has really has a lot of damage control to do with their brand, right? With this hack. You know, perhaps Target or, you know, some of these other firms may not be affected by a hack. But, you know, technology companies that are supposed to be a lot more aware are suffering from this, right? So I think what's going on is that the companies that have intellectual property that needs to be safeguarded are now awake. It's not just about leaking consumer information, just like in the case of Target and others.
Yeah, who cares about the consumer information? I mean,
right? That's exactly the point. That's, you know, that's your point, actually, Andrew. But now, you know, you got a lot of the designs that Tesla had that have been essentially ransomwared and not, you know, not being put, you know, not being given back to the to that supplier company for Tesla, as an example. You know, even when they were unlocked because they paid the ransom, who knows what they did with that IP. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
the exposure profiles change, right? So, you know, back to Mike's ageism, right? When he was in the data center, like, you know, sometimes it was just literally the physical locks on the door that was enough. But now when you
you've been to one of my data centers.
Yeah, that's right. It was a smoking pile of fire off the 95, right, in New Jersey. No, but I mean, the problem is when you start dumping things in a public cloud, you know, collaboration is great. Highly available resources are great. Highly scalable resources are great. But you've got a lot of back doors into your sort of pipeline that you got to be a lot more cognizant of. And to be honest, like we all joke, but, you know, consumer data is obviously important. But, you know, I think my social security number has been linked probably at least 80 times since I've been alive. Exactly. For Mike, it's been probably about 200. So, you know, yeah, the exposure profile has completely changed.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's interesting, you know, now really that exposure is more great because of social media and because of, you know, everything that's out there. It's a brand. So, you know, you tarnish your brand when you have one of these things happen. And that's the more important thing to the bottom line, I would argue. But to go back to what you were saying about, you know, that exposure profile, I would argue that, almost argue that, you know, cloud is probably the safer place to be because there's, you know, there's more protection put into place. There's more policy. And if you go to any company and you just have, you know, whoever's managing that, I would argue that those places are less, you know, tightly, you know, and it depends. It's obviously all over the place, but less tightly governed and, you know, put together than something in the cloud.
Michael, 100%. And you know, we'll talk about that. You know, there's a lot of people who would say, well, you know, cloud security and on-prem security are kind of the same. You know, it all depends on the controls that you put in. I actually disagree with a lot of that. Yeah, certainly. The controls are the same. You can put multi-factor authentication on both, you know, so on and so forth. But then, you know, who's, you know, on-prem, if you're doing it yourself, you know, do you have the best and brightest? Do you have a 24/7 team that's monitoring your security, right? And now we're talking about the IT security. You know, that's other than physical security. In the last few weeks in Texas, couldn't get to their offices. People could not get to their offices. You know, if you have servers in like some server closet or on-prem somewhere, who knows what's going on there, right? You know, whether, you know, the power's out, you know, who's going to go in and reboot, you know, oh, okay, well, it's the closest person to that office that's going to get there. You know, do they have the security clearances? Do they know what they're doing? You know, are they going to inadvertently expose, right? So when you are putting it in the cloud, you know, these are centralized data centers and centralized systems that are spread, both centralized and spread all over the world to make sure that they are protected against eventualities like this, right? And then security is built in. Whenever we're, you know, building systems in the cloud, I mean, you got a bunch of paranoid people like me and, you know, and you and others, right, that are building these things for every single eventuality, because we have thousands of customers. It's not just one customer that's going to get impacted. It's not just Target or a bank or whatnot. It's thousands of customers that are going to get impacted. And, you know, we got to build it with that level of paranoia, right? Where, you know, kind of looking at every eventuality and really kicking around, you know, every one of those black swan events that can happen to make sure that we guard against it.
That's a good point, right? One of the things that we commonly come against, and this is more of a personal day job thing, but, you know, Mike and I are always trying to position a SaaS platform, what is fundamentally a SaaS platform. And that's really what AWS and Azure and Office 365 really are. And there's always a lot of pushback from either, you know, an IT administrator or, you know, we'll call them a technologist, where they've rolled their own for so long that they think that everything's hunky-dory, that nothing possibly could go wrong. And it's usually in those conversations, as you start to talk to their boss and you start to ask those questions like, what is your disaster recovery plan? What is your access control policy? What dictates governance in your given environments? How do you do backups, right? All of a sudden that guy, the technologist, is in the back of the room just like shrinking into a little ball, because he realizes that like 50 to 80% of what you just asked is not documented. It's only understood by him and his immediate team. And when he goes and he takes a higher paying job at a different company, you're stuck holding all the things that he was doing. And so it's really like, I can understand an aversion to maybe going to a SaaS platform because you have security concerns, but do your research first is probably what I would advocate. Like, you've got major companies who are running their entire operation on AWS. I guarantee you they're doing it in such a way that it is far safer than anything Citibank was ever doing in their private data center, right? Absolutely. Because they're not getting hacked. They're not getting hacked. So, you know, that's a little soapboxy, but it is something that Mike and I do have to fight with every single day when we talk to our customers.
No, you're spot on. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, where it breaks down is that you really have the 24/7 team that does that, you know, on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And, you know, I mean, that's there, right? Because a lot of these hacks happen. I used to always call it. I'm like, okay, you know, it's Memorial Day. You know, there's going to be a bunch of activity during that, because this is when, you know, people's defenses are the lowest, right? I mean, hackers are smart. You know, you're talking about these hackers are no longer, you know, a dude in the basement, right? I mean, these are nation states, right? The hacker factories, you know, people show up, it's a building in China, Russia, Iran, Vietnam, you name it, right? People show up to work just like we show up to work. And then, you know, they're going in and they're trying to hack. They're trying to create all kinds of nefarious activity out there. North Korea actually pays, the government actually pays these hackers. There's thousands of them. It's documented and have been proven over and over and over again, right?
We just call them the CIA and the FBI in the United States.
I mean, that's a great point. I mean, there's you know, when I remember the same thing you were talking about, that, you know, during those times there would be a way more activity and you know, and things like that. That's why it's very important to put systems in place that monitor these things. You know, it's funny because anytime I remember going, I used to set up a lot of IDS and IDP platforms back in the day, in the old days, Andrew. They used to have these things.
The good old days.
Yeah. And it's funny because like 90% of the time I'd go back like 2 weeks later, I'd be like, so what did you do? Did you, you know, filter out all the bad messages and, you know, whittle it down to, you know, only the stuff that you need and make sure you put in all your servers and, you know, what the good traffic is and all that kind of stuff, all the, you know, tuning that. And, you know, most of the time they'd be like, oh, we just didn't have time. We didn't have time to do it. You know? So, There's this whole thing, you know, this whole concept of, you know, IT has these priorities, and the priorities are usually to get something out the door or to do something or to configure something. The priorities typically aren't around, you know, security. They'll do best, you know, what they think are best practices during implementation time. But all other times it's just status quo. So, you know, you got to think about when you deploy something to the cloud, you're getting best practices out of the box, whereas you're not, you know, you're not doing something, you know, you're not doing that on-prem.
On an ongoing basis, exactly. I mean, that's the whole idea. You nailed it. You know, we'll do it once here, but then what's the continual improvement processes that are going on that's being done all the time. You're absolutely right.
So you actually, one of the things that you wanted to talk about, and I actually think this is a great segue for it, is when you're evaluating these platforms, when you're evaluating to go public cloud or SaaS versus something on-prem, in your opinion, is that something that the IT administrator should be cognizant of, or is it something that the C-suite should be cognizant of? Like, is this more of a bottom-up directive? Because I feel like it usually has been in the past, right? Like, let's be fair. A lot of IT administrators acknowledge that they're lacking framework, they're lacking a lot of the right product or the right processes to ensure that everything is safe. And they're usually the first people to say, hey, by the way, like, this is a problem. So are we seeing a paradigm shift here a little bit where the CEOs are acknowledging like, hey, I need to drive this from the top down. Security needs to be something that happens at my level and I shouldn't leave it up to the engineer to solve?
Listen, digital transformation was a buzzword, but, you know, frankly, you know, CEOs came in, you know, about, you know, 3-4 years ago. It's like, hey man, you know, I was at the CEO quote unquote conference and, you know, Gartner or IDC or whoever, you know, said, you know, we got to go to the cloud. And they would, you know, it was pushed down. Like, you know, they were pushing it down on the, you know, we got to go to the cloud, you know, pay, you know, and then CFOs got involved as well. And, you know, pay as you go and so on and so forth. And the poor IT managers and IT directors and CIOs were like, okay, you know, like, you know, it's not just a wave of the hand, you know, where you can just put something in the cloud, right? You know, we got old legacy data, databases that, you know, that don't transfer very well in the cloud that were designed and built, you know, way before the word cloud was even conceived of, right? So that's kind of like, you know, the era of Michael and I, right, where we come from. So, you know, from a long time ago. So bottom line is that right now, the same pressure is coming down to the CIOs and IT administrators, but now it's security, right? It's like, hey, what are we going to do about the security thing? You know, so-and-so got hacked. You know, I read about this and, you know, my school got hacked. The other day, you know, we had a bank out of the Baltimore area and they said, well, my kids' school got hacked and ransomware. I can't imagine what's going to happen if it happens to us, right? Very interesting, right? So you know, I've written an article that says, you know, no one's safe. And people said, well, thanks, you know, now we're all paranoid. But, you know, seriously, no one's safe. I mean, this stuff is going to schools, going to things that, you know, we did not think that it would be a target, right? So anyway, this is kind of the long segue here, but yeah.
Yeah, no. So I think the key, you know, the key has always been the same though. Limiting your attack vector. And in order to do that in the cloud, you have to do a few things a little bit differently. Whereas before we were looking more as software packages and verifying that, you know, those vendors were doing the best practices. Now what you're doing is in the cloud world is things are more agile and you have a lot more companies creating the software. So you need to validate the software. You need to validate, you know, configurations of like things like Kubernetes and API gateways and all this other kind of stuff. So, you know, it's a whole different world of security than just saying, hey, I have a firewall and I'm good. You know, I'm not letting anything in. You really have to, you know, verify and kind of validate, you know, everything across the way and just give that least privilege, you know? So what do you think about, you know, those elements of cloud security?
Absolutely. I mean, least privilege, zero trust. I mean, that's where you need to start because especially in this COVID era, right? You know, you guys are working from home. You know, last week because of the Snowvid in Texas, I was working from home as well. You know, a lot of our staff was working from home.
Wait, did you just drop Snowvid?
Snowvid. Yeah, exactly.
Snowvid. I like that.
Is a new one that I have not heard. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that was, I haven't experienced Snowvid yet myself. And I'm sure Mike is intimately familiar with this, but yeah. Okay. That sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, exactly. It was here. So, yeah, combined COVID with a crazy Arctic front that hit Texas last week. You know, no power, no water. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But you know, bottom line, we were all trying to work from home, right? And then and are still, you know, a lot of our teams are working from home. You know, you gotta reevaluate what this new world looks like. You know, you have people that are, you know, have full access to the network from a home computer, right? You know, I continuously say when there's a lack of authentications, there's going to be a lack of authenticity, and you're going to have major issues, right? You're going to have major issues when you do that. And then, you know, I would really advise everybody to kind of go with, you know, a comprehensive security program where, you know, it starts with multi-factor authentication, all the way to, you know, monitoring every bit of data that comes in and out of your network at every level and really rethinking it in terms of zero trust. But
yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I mean, you look at the decentralized nature of business now, and honestly, you know, you know, COVID was the worst thing that could have happened, obviously, but one thing that it did do that was good is teach people, the companies, that technology can be good for business, and that, you know, you could maintain a business and use more resources around the world by using things like WebEx and all this technology, and your company will still run just as good. So it's kind of brought companies into the future. And I don't foresee that changing even after COVID. Post-COVID, I think it's going to be a different world. I don't think you're going to see these big, you know, you still will see some big campuses. It depends on your tech, you know, your vertical. But I think for the most part, you know, or a large part, you're going to see, you know, this distributed nature, which changes the aspect of the attack vectors and everything else that you're, you know, that occurs around there. So
absolutely. Yeah. The office.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, Emil.
No, what I was saying is that the office is going to be a resource. It's not going to be a place to go to. You know, you can come in once a week, once a month, twice a week. You know, come in for an offsite. You know, this is after COVID goes away. But yeah, I mean, the office is going to be a resource. It's not going to be, look, you're going to go clock in 8 to 5 every day, right? So,
yep. I saw an interesting article about the death of the Black Swan event, and that COVID highlighted that. You can't just assume that certain things will never happen because it's convenient to you and what you've been chartered to do. So like I look at, you know, the Texas snowstorm and obviously what happened last week as it's a freak accident. Don't get me wrong. Like it is the storm of a century, if you will, but it seems like we're having a storm or an event of the century every 3 to 4 years. Right. And so, you know, maybe you stop looking at things as like a black swan event and you acknowledge that like some of these things are very real possibilities, right? Like look at the extremes. What happens tomorrow to my business if 95% of my workforce can't make it into the office, right? That seems like, you know,
by the way, black swans all over the world are offended right now.
I know. We gotta make sure that none of this gets edited in such a way that anyone gets in trouble, right? But yeah, I mean,
we're gonna Dr. Seuss that stuff right now.
It is. I don't want to get canceled. I'm way too young. It's a very interesting sort of conversation, right? Because I think a lot of people they use that sort of definition as an opportunity to say, well, like I had no idea, right? But if you're running a moderately sized business, your DR, your high HA strategy, your remote work strategy, your cloud strategy, yeah, you should be cognizant that there might be global or weather events that will prevent you from getting into the office. And it might be 95% of your workforce.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's an interesting thing because so first of all, I was one of three people during 9/11 to be first on site at Comdisco in New Jersey. And so I really experienced what that's like in terms of a real world disaster. But I think those disasters are different now. The disasters that we're talking about are You know, they're not just one particular building. They're global in nature. There's a lot of things that can occur. And also you're dealing with a different workforce, a distributed workforce. So I remember, you know, when I was a consultant going in every so often into a disaster recovery center and planning for that kind of disaster where a building was down. But now you have to plan for a disaster where people can't get to a building, where people can't, you know, it's a different kind of uptime and it's a different kind of strategy that you need to plan for. So it's interesting that, you know, that kind of old DR strategy probably doesn't play the same as you know, as it is today with things like COVID and the freak Texas storm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, the bar for what we call a black swan event to both your points has gone way up, right? There's no excuse, right? It's gone way up, you know, and, you know, we got to plan for that, right? I mean, you know, a meteor hitting the you know, the planet, you know, maybe now considered a black swan event, but but you know, everything below that, you know, we got to start planning for that because, you know, we're changing. I mean, you know, there's the weather is changing. You know, there's more people on the planet. There's more needs. We have created a very high level of dependency on man-made systems.
I would say more importantly, you've created a dependency on man-made systems that you don't even control. So, correct. You know, I think we're advocating very strongly, you know, move to the public cloud, consider all the benefits that the public cloud can give you. But now it kind of changes the sort of questions and things that you need to care about, right? You no longer need to care about, maybe governance and policy because Amazon has a really rich IAM sort of framework that you can use and you can learn how to use it. But okay, what happens when Amazon goes down? Right? Because you're no longer in control of your data center, right? Your data center is Amazon and Amazon is a business and theoretically it might go down. We've seen it happen at least three times in the last 5 years. So those are, it changes the sort of questions and concerns that you might need to have as you start to evaluate some of these alternative solutions, right? You're not worried about, do I have dual power, you know, power supplies in every server? Do I have redundant power to the building? Does it have a, you know, a backup generator? Like those things are all important when you're running your own data center. But when you're moving everything to Equinix, right, you got to make sure you ask about those things. You can't just assume that they're going to have them, right? Because then you'll get caught out in the cold, so to speak, if something happens that you're not prepared for.
Correct. Yeah. And look, you know, some of the answers may be, well, you know, don't just depend on AWS, you know, add Azure and add Google to the mix. And that way you have a multi-cloud. Okay, but here it is. You know, what happens when all three of them go down? You know, what happens when the network that connects you to all three of them goes down? Right. So, you know, we got to think through all these and build these scenarios and then, you know, give the options to the business leaders in the companies and say, look, you know, what level of risk are you willing to assume? Right. To what level are you willing to build redundancy and security and so on and so forth?
Hey, at first we just got to get people to create cloud native applications, which right now they're just sticking their regular apps up in the cloud. So, you know, it's all, you know, baby steps here.
Amen. Absolutely.
So,
did you have a question, Mike?
No, go ahead, Andrew.
So I did want to kind of bring it back to that SolarWinds conversation because we've alluded to it a couple times and, you know, I've done my reading, but I'm sure there are plenty of people who are listening who would like to maybe hear, you know, honestly, a securities expert's sort of readout on what happened and what sort of considerations are coming out of this. So could you give us, I guess, really quick a primer on what was discovered? I know most of this, I think, happened in December of last year, and it was only recently coming out. I find it ironic that they just released their, I think, Q2 results, and there's like going to be a significant lag and I think the ramifications of what happened here, but yeah, could you just kind of describe what happened there and maybe the sort of fallout that's going to occur?
Sure. I mean, the highlight to me is that this is a supply chain. You know, it wasn't necessarily a solar wind hack as much as solar wind was used to hack other end customers and expose other end customers, right? So that's a, you know, by the way, I don't want to, you know, just focus on sort of, you know, right before that, it was FireEye, which is another security company that also got compromised, if you guys remember, right? It was right before that. So, you know, we had SolarWind, we had FireEye. You know, and of course, you know, we had Capital One, which we talked about, but you know, this is a supply chain hack. And this has been happening over and over again. Maybe not necessarily with this type of publicity, because again, you know, this is so broad, you know, broad ranging, you know, it affected the US government, it affected three-letter agencies. The solar wind hack, you know, we don't know all of its ramifications because a lot of it is actually classified, because it, you know, it touched very, very, very sensitive organizations in the government, both in the US and outside of the US. So what's going on is that they used SolarWind as a Trojan horse to enter end organizations they were targeting. In the past, you know, we've seen this happen with things like marketing analytics type pieces of software, SaaS platforms that, you know, you would put on your website to monitor your visitors and so on and so forth. We've seen hacks come into that, you know, and there was one famous one, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago that actually affected RSA, the security organization, right? And their website got hacked and so on and so forth. So we've seen these types of supply chain attacks happen, but this was so sophisticated, was so dormant. And as we talked about in the beginning of the meeting here, the podcast, you know, very likely, highly likely that this was a nation state that was behind it.
I think what was fascinating to me is that it was part of the build process, if my understanding is correct, and that when they went to go repackage a new build of SolarWinds, it was inserting itself after the fact. And so it was like the very thing that was created, the framework that was created, the pipeline that was created to find those sort of issues, to find bugs and et cetera, to do, you know, smoke tests and all that, was the thing that actually was hacked, right? That actually allowed this to kind of make its way into production. So it was highly sophisticated. I think the other thing that made it interesting was that they knew how to stay hidden, right? Usually what happens is like, it kind of all the dominoes fall in one fell swoop, but they were pretty good about, like, you know, poking at the right things at the right time to make sure that, you know, okay, like, this is going to get us discovered. Let's not probe here. Mm-hmm. So it was very sophisticated. Absolutely.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, how do you recover from something like that? I mean, that's a tough thing. You know, everybody, but pre-hack, I mean, pretty much every company in the world had some form of SolarWinds, you know, so I don't know.
Are you asking how a government agency recovers?
Or no, I'm asking how a company like SolarWinds recovers from that. That's an interesting thing.
That's a good question. You know, that's a good question. I mean, look, it's you know, this is the core of what the promise that you offer to your customers. So, I mean, I think there's going to be a period of reckoning and a period of damage control. And I hope and pray, because I mean, they're across the highway from us. They're not far from us in Austin, Texas. Their headquarters are. So I hope and pray for all my friends that are there that, you know, they do the turnaround and figure it out. And, you know, they got to admit the mistakes. They got to be transparent. And they got to move forward with courage and conviction and spare no resource to assure their customers that this is not going to happen again. And even when you do that, sometimes you don't gain the faith back of your customers. Yeah. Right. So all the right things. So,
yeah, there's an element of this where it's like, you know, you look at the Citibank hacks, the Equinix hacks, and you think, and you just shake your head because you're like, this was 100% your fault. You should have taken better care of our data. And then you look at something like this, where it's highly sophisticated, it's targeted, you do have to feel for the company. I think there are a lot of people out there who look at the vendors and say, oh, I'll shed no tear for a vendor, right? You know, like, you know, Cisco's got its fair share of bugs that make it its way into production code, and it's not something that any of us are proud of.
I will deny that.
I swear I see a piece of it like once every other day. But yeah, I mean, the point being is that there is an element of like, you hope to see the company turn around and make a, you know, yeah, make headway to recovering their image and their products. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, look, you know, I have a column in Forbes that I write about, and then, you know, this is one of the things that I'm, you know, begging the new administration to do is just really have a focus, a much sharper focus on cybersecurity as national security, right? This is part of our national security. And I don't think that, you know, just having a Senate hearing is going to cut it, because these guys, I mean, bless their hearts, you know, they're even, you know, older than Michael and me, you know, so I mean, they don't get it, right? So, you know, we got to have a, you know,
say what you will, but none of you guys are cats right now. And that says a lot about how much you understand about technology. That might, depending on how much you follow the news, that might land dead there. But
what I was going to say is that now you got me with the cats thing. I was going to say something, and now you just totally threw me off with the whole cats thing. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Now I forget. Go ahead.
So this has been great. You know, we appreciate you coming on the show and kind of giving us a deep dive conversation on, you know, cloud security. And I feel like this conversation could have gone 1,000 different ways, right? And so we appreciate that we really were able to hone in on a very specific subject and kind of uncover things that companies should be cognizant of as they move into this more cloudy sort of way of doing things when it comes to security. You know, before we wrap up though, I did want to give you an opportunity. Are there any like key takeaways or any things that you definitely want to make sure that people take home who are listening to this? Especially, I think as we started talking about the paradigm shift from this being an IT administrator's problem to maybe a C-suite problem. You know, what sort of takeaways would you like to leave the audience with as we close?
Absolutely. Look, you know, here's what I'd love to kind of have people remember. One is that there's no organization in the world that's impervious to cyber threats. Let's just you know, establish that. And you know, we gotta look at some of these, you know, companies that are getting hacked with some level of grace. But what I want to say is that, you know, two heads are always better than one, right? Especially when it comes to protection and detection, response, recovery, you know, so on and so forth. Because, you know, there are people that do this for a living, that manage the security of very large infrastructure, and they have years and years and years and years and years of experience in this. They've seen every possible permutation of a security flaw. And this is why, you know, managed security services that sit on top of multiple clouds, multiple public clouds and private clouds and on-prem even, you know, that's becoming a major industry that is growing. And I would urge everybody to essentially look at their threat profile and figure out who they can partner with to manage the security. You know, you don't have your own security guards for the building, right? You need to have, you contract a security company that does this for a living, that knows the laws, that, you know, has a network of physical security personnel. Well, same deal with IT security. You know, there are many companies out there, including Entirety, that, you know, this is what we do for a living. And anyway, so that would be my key takeaways.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We probably will have you back on at some point, and hopefully it's not because yet another thing has been hacked and, you know, our social security numbers are being passed around again. You know, but you were a great guest. We really appreciate it. Absolutely. In the show notes, we'll include, you mentioned that you're on Twitter, and LinkedIn. So we'll make sure that we include those. And then you've got some links about, Entirety. And I don't know why I always struggle. I see the word, I know what to say, but I always struggle. Entirety. It's so difficult for me.
You always struggle. The whole
thing. It's just the whole thing.
You know, us millennials, we can't read.
That's only one of the things you can't do. That's just, you know, there's.
So thank you so much, Emil. We really appreciate having you as a guest on the show. And we look forward to everyone joining us next week on our next episode. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You guys are awesome.
All right. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.